Good afternoon. It's 3 o'clock and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau here on Wednesday, the 28th of September, the year 2011. Jeff Brown with you here on a Juneau afternoon. Today we'll talk with people involved in Sunday's production of the play Birth, sponsored by the International Caesarean Awareness Network. Bruce Simonson will be here to highlight this week's Messiah Community Sing Fest. We'll also get a preview of this Friday's concert at the Rookery by Tracy Spring. We'll also learn about Life by the Lynn with author Christine Loney, who's having a book signing Saturday at Hearthside Books in the Nugget Mall. And Writer's Almanac Music and more today on a Juneau afternoon. With the forecast for tonight, rain, low temperatures around 43 degrees. Forecast for Thursday looks like areas of fog with rain and high temperatures around 47 degrees.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A judge has reduced the sentence of a man convicted of first-degree murder in the 1975 death of Annie Mae Aquash. Aquash, a Mi'kmaq woman from Canada, was found shot in the head on the Pine Ridge Reservation. South Dakota Public Broadcasting's Jennifer Jones reports.
In 2004, Arlo Looking Cloud was sentenced to life in prison, but that sentence has been reduced to 20 years. In December, Looking Cloud testified for state prosecutors against co-conspirator John Graham. South Dakota Attorney General Marty Jackley says federal law allows for a reduction of sentence for a change of circumstances.
And I do believe that circumstances have changed in Mr. Looking Cloud's case since his original conviction and sentence. While he had not testified at his trial, he has since provided a lengthy account of what occurred in his eyes during the Graham trial, which, of course, is a public record. And I think he's also shown some genuine remorse, which came out during the trial and the further proceedings that have occurred in the Annie Mae Aquash death investigation.
Currently, there is no parole in the federal system, but there was in 1975 when the murder occurred. Jackley says he can't go into specifics on parole. He says the case dealing with the murder of Annie Mae Aquash remains an open investigation. For National Native News, I'm Jennifer Jones.
A federal judge has approved a compromise that allows voting for the next leader of the Cherokee Nation to continue. KGOU's Kurt Gorney has the latest on the troubled election.
The agreement between the Cherokee Nation and the descendants of slaves once owned by its members will allow more than 30,000 registered voters to cast ballots for tribal chief if they haven't already. U.S. District Judge Henry H. Kennedy-backed agreement struck earlier in the week between the tribe and the slave descendants known as freedmen after the Tribal Election Commission missed court-ordered deadlines to inform the descendants they could cast ballots during voting on Saturday and to also send out absentee ballots. The ruling adds 5 additional walk-in voting days for any registered voter. The Cherokee Nation's Election Commission released a statement saying people who know little about conducting elections are inserting themselves into the commission's day-to-day operations. A team from the Atlanta-based Carter Center that observed Saturday's election says overall they saw competent administration of the election by the Cherokee Nation Election Commission and precinct polling staff. The last day to vote in the election for principal chief is October 8th. For National Native News, I'm Kurt Gwartney.
A lawsuit filed Tuesday accuses Montana priests and nuns of abuse, including rape and molestation. According to the Associated Press, the lawsuit against the Roman Catholic Diocese of Helena alleges nuns at the Ursuline Academy and priests affiliated with the school abused the plaintiffs from the 1940s to the 1970s. The 45 unnamed plaintiffs are Native American. A similar lawsuit was filed against the diocese last week with 34 people. A spokesperson for the diocese says the alleged abusers, many deceased, were not part of the diocese. A New Mexico Pueblo and the U.S. Corps of Engineers signs an agreement to help in restoration of Pueblo lands. This month, Santa Clara Pueblo and the Albuquerque District agreed to conduct a watershed assessment for Pueblo lands devastated by summer wildfires. The assessment will produce a plan for construction and restoration opportunities for the tribe, including flood protection. The agreement under the Tribal Partnership Program is the first to be signed between the Corps and a tribal government. The program allows up to $1 million a year per tribe for water-related planning activities. The agreement includes a 25% cost share by the tribe, which can include in-kind work or equipment. The northern New Mexico Pueblo has been impacted by large forest fires in the past, but this summer's wildfire burned more than half of the watershed. On this day in 1971, Alaska Governor William Egan signed a proclamation declaring the first week of October as Alaska Native Peoples Week. The week was to recognize contributions of Alaska Native people to the state. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Time is 3:05 and you are tuned in to KTWO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. Our first guests are here to talk about the play Birth. It's a play that's sponsored by the International Caesarian Awareness Network. It's being shown this Sunday at 3 p.m. at the Juneau Arts and Culture Center. Paige McGuan is one of the actresses involved in the play. Patricia Hall is the director, and Emily Ferris here is a member of ICANN. Thank you very much for coming to the station, everybody.
Thank you.
So, Emily, first, can you tell me a little bit about ICANN, please?
Well, as the name indicates, it's an international organization. The mission is to improve maternal child health by preventing unnecessary cesareans through both education, providing support for cesarean recovery, and promoting vaginal birth after cesarean, known as VBAC. So the Juneau chapter formed recently over the past year, and in particular, we're focused on the vaginal birth after recovery or after cesarean issue, the VBAC. Currently, that's not offered here in Juneau, and that's something that we would like to see as an option for women in Juneau.
What's the problem with a cesarean birth?
Well, after a cesarean birth, first of all, I want to say that cesareans do save lives, and we're really lucky to have them as a tool. Many lives have been saved by them. So I don't want anyone to think that we are against cesareans. However, it's not always the birth option that many women would like. And for me, I had to have a cesarean because I had twins. I would have much preferred to have a vaginal birth. And as a result, afterwards, I had more complications. There's increased risk of infection, and there's a decreased risk of secondary fertility after cesareans, especially if you have multiple cesareans. So for a variety of physical and emotional reasons, many women find that they prefer vaginal birth. And again, we'd like to just see that as an option here in Juneau.
This is Paige, and I'm particularly interested in VBAC because my first son was born by cesarean. It was an unplanned cesarean. It was not a traumatic experience. It was actually pretty nice, but it was not expected. I had preferred to deliver naturally. And afterwards, there was a significant amount of time that it took my son and I to bond. And I feel like for my next birth, which is coming up in March, I would really prefer to have a vaginal birth for my own health and safety as well as the health and safety of my baby. I feel like it's the best option for me. I'm a low risk in every other sense of the word.
What's stopping it from being an option here in Juneau?
Well, currently the hospital and doctors here cite the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists, known as ACOG. That's the professional organization. They've put out guidelines that say that they would like to have immediately available emergency services. In other words, an operating team on standby, and that's something that, given the small size of our community, is not offered currently. However, that same organization, ACOG, has also said that women should be able to accept that increased risk, that they would like to have physicians consult with their patients and make a decision about the type of birth that they would prefer to have together, rather than simply being told, no, it's not an option.
And the emergency response team is there in case of the unlikely event of uterine rupture, which is the most common risk associated with vaginal birth after cesarean. However, the risk is actually fairly low. The VBAC companion, written by Diana Court, states that the risk of uterine rupture with a low horizontal scar from your first cesarean is actually less than 1%. That number could even be lower without additional artificial induction methods, such as Pitocin, for labor induction.
You're here today to talk about a play called Birth, which is being shown this Sunday at 3 p.m. at the Juno Arts and Culture Center. Can you tell me a little bit about the play, Patricia, please?
Sure. The play is written by Karen Brody, who's a mom of two, and she was inspired to write it after her birth experiences and wanting to raise awareness of what birth is in the United States, how we view it as a medical event and not as a natural occurring event. She interviewed 130 women and compiled from their stories the experiences of eight characters that we follow through the play. And not only are there those eight voices, but there's another 50 voices of minor characters that she has in there. So it's, our actresses are really busy. But they explore a lot of different issues through the narratives of these women.
And the narratives just are part of the plot, or just weave together to form the plot?
Exactly. The stories, the commonalities are all of these women are giving birth and in many different ways.
How many actors are in the play?
There's eight women, and some of them have been on stage before. Lily Hope is a seasoned actor. Of course, she's worked at Perseverance, and pretty much everybody else hasn't. And they're really stepping out of their comfort zone to do this, and I'm super proud of them because they're all, Paige included, are doing really incredible work. And a lot of times, they're cast in a character that maybe has a little bit of them in it, but they are all having to stretch and become somebody that they're not. And they're just doing really wonderfully. And I think the energy of them and just their genuine love of this play really shines through. The audience will really enjoy it.
Would you categorize this as a series of monologues?
It is a series of monologues, but it's much more active than that. And even though we're staging it as Reader's Theater, there is a lot more activity going on. It's not just people sitting and reading. We do have more movement. We've actually staged what they call blocking. We've actually blocked a couple of scenes because they just demanded it. It is a play that's not really appropriate for kids. This is for adults. This is for anybody who is a prospective parent, expecting parent, anyone interested in healthcare issues. It's really for adults. It's really a good play for adults, and I'd say older teens too.
Paige, what's it been like being on the stage for the first time?
Well, the first time I think was actually with you, Jeff, who was when I was in third or fourth grade with Peter Pan. So
you can
it's
fly,
been a while.
You can fly.
What's that?
You can fly.
Yes, but yeah, there's no flying involved here, so it's a little it's been different. I've had to kind of develop a different voice. My character is a very different person than I am, so I've had to really learn to develop her voice and give her credit, even though she's a person that is unlike me and has made very different choices about her birth than I would make about mine.
And the play is this Sunday at 3 p.m. at the Juno Arts and Culture Center. Is there an admission fee to get in?
There's a $10 fee, and tickets are at the door and also at Rainy Day Books.
All right. I've been talking to Patricia Hull, Paige McGowan, and Emily Ferry about the play Birth again, 3 o'clock this Sunday at the Juno Arts and Culture Center, $10 admission. Is there anything you'd like to add I might have forgotten to ask?
If people are interested in getting involved with ICANN of Juno, they can give us a call at 957-6418. And or an email at icannofjuno@yahoo.com. And ICANN is just as it spells, ICAN. And again, in addition to our efforts to give women more options here in Juno, birth options, we also are here to support women who have had cesareans or may be facing that, and we're a support network as well.
Thank you very much, Jeff.
Thank you for coming down.
Thank you.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday. It's the 28th of September, 2011. It's the birthday of the scrivener and alchemist Nicolas Flamel, born on the outskirts of Paris, 1300, given a good education, set up shop in the Rue de Marivaux, writing letters for people, selling manuscripts, copying texts, who in the course of running his business came into possession, it was said, of a curious book, which contained a complete exposition on the art of transmuting base metal to gold, alchemy, using the legendary Philosopher's Stone, and the means by which one could distill from the stone the elixir of life and extend human life indefinitely, become immortal. The book was called The Book of Abraham the Jew. Nicholas Flamel and his wife, Perenelle, became wealthy, though they lived the life of scholars. They died in their 80s, were buried in the Cemetery of the Innocents in Paris, and soon after, the tomb was broken into by thieves who were hoping to find the Philosopher's Stone, and it was found to be empty. There was no gold, nor were the Flamel's bodies there, which indicated to the Flamel's students and followers that they had indeed distilled the elixir of life, and they had become immortal. 300 years later, a French archaeologist in Turkey met a man who said he was a philosopher and who knew detailed histories of the Flamels, and told the archaeologist that they were, in fact, still alive and were living in India. And from time to time since, there have been claims that the Flamels have been seen or met or heard, that they're still alive and still at their studies. And now a new generation has been introduced to Nicholas and Perenelle Flamel. They appear in the first book of the Harry Potter series, The Sorcerer's Stone. They're in their late 600s. They're friends of Albus Dumbledore, the wizard, and the headmaster of Hogwarts School of Witchcraft and Wizardry. Today is the feast day of Wenceslaus I, the Duke of Bohemia, best known from the Christmas Carol, Good King Wenceslaus, born in Bohemia in the year 907. And today is the birthday of the English plumber Thomas Crapper, born in Yorkshire in 1836, who, contrary to popular belief, did not invent the flush toilet. It had existed for centuries, but he did invent a number of plumbing mechanisms, including the floating bullcock, and there are manhole covers in Westminster Abbey which bear his name, which have become a minor tourist attraction. Here's a poem for today by William Carlos Williams, Reverie and Invocation. Whether the rain comes down, or there be sunny days, the sleets of January, or the haze of autumn afternoons, when we dream of our youth, our gaze grows mellow. Wise man or fool, we were young, the future beckoned us. Now we grow old and gray, and all we knew is forgotten. There comes alive in the ash of today memory, a God who revives us. The apple trees we climbed as a boy, the caress on our necks of a summer breeze. Come back and give us those days when passion drove us to break every rule. We weren't bad, but good. May our preachers find us the courage still to sin so, and win so, and win so, a life everlasting. A poem by William Carlos Williams, Reverie and Invocation, from his collected poems published by New Directions and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, where your mobile device can turn into a virtual poetry library with the Poetry Foundation's poetry app. You can find it online at poetryfoundation.org. Edited by Noah Smith and written by Priscilla Kinter. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Perseverance Theater season opens with Alfred Hitchcock's The 39 Steps. This Tony Award-winning comedy features four actors playing dozens and dozens and dozens of colorful characters. Part mystery, part romance, and all laughs. You'll love this take on Hitchcock's classic. The 39 Steps runs September 23rd through October 16th. For more information, visit perseverancetheater.org or call 463-TIXS. Play big at Perseverance Theater.
Time is 3:19 and you are attuned to KTOO News in Juno here on a Juno afternoon. Tune in to the Alaska Identity Project tomorrow night from 7-8 p.m. Host Adrian Lopez will first interview the Lieutenant Governor of Alaska, Meet Treadwell. And then Julie Estee, Business Director for the Alaska Center for Energy and Power, organizing the Rural Energy Conference in Juneau happening this week. Again, that's the Alaska Identity Project tomorrow night from 7 to 8 p.m., hosted by Adrian Lopez. Coming up next, some music from Tracy Spring. Singer-songwriter Tracy Spring should be appearing in concert this Friday night at the Rookery at 7 o'clock. Took it by donation. Tracy is in the studio with us today. Tracy, thank you for coming down the station today.
Oh, thanks for having me, Jeff. It's Tracy, great to be here.
Tracy is from the Bellingham area, and I met her about 20 years ago or more when I coordinated a concert series called Mama Sundays. And in she comes last week and says, "Here I am, Juno." So thank you for coming by.
Yeah, it's great to be here. It's raining. I'm shocked.
Your songs have been compared to three-minute novels. Do you start the songwriting process as an author or a musician?
Oh, I've done it both ways. Sometimes they almost seem like they're writing each other, each part. But I'd say it's about a 50-50 process for me.
Are most of your songs from a personal experience, or are they just kind of you telling a story about somebody else who might exist mythically or in reality?
Yeah, it's a good mix. There's usually a kernel of truth in it for me that resonates with even somebody else's story. But I think we tend to write in a way that reflects our own experience, even if we're writing about somebody else.
You play not only guitar, but is that a bouzouki in the picture?
Yeah, that was octave mandolin, bouzouki, mandocello, cross.
Do you write on that, or do you use it as an instrument?
I've used it for mostly just playing my dulcimer repertoire, since I don't really play dulcimer anymore. So it's got that nice double-stringed, double-chorus sound, kind of droney. I don't think I've written anything on it, but I've learned arrangements that I wrote on dulcimer and played it on it.
When got you started playing music in the first place?
Oh, the women in my family were musical. I grew up at my mother's knee. She used to play piano. She was a music teacher that became a writer. But I think she just loved music so much. It was a way to interact with her. And my sister played the concert French horn, and I was the renegade. I played folk music. But music was always in the family.
How soon after starting to learn to play did you start to learn how to write?
Well, I started playing guitar when I was 10 years old. Sneak next door to my cousin's house and borrow her guitar, which she never played. And I wrote my first song when I was 11, and it was a Vietnam War protest song. And I wish I could remember it.
You have a way of capturing a phrase of that song we just heard about palindromes that makes it memorable. Is that hard work? Is songwriting hard work for you, or is it easy?
You know, the phrase, usually there's a phrase or a hook or a melodic line that comes that I will build an entire song around. So the phrase is actually easy. It's the rest of the song that requires crafting into something that feels cohesive and coherent and means something, sometimes many things. So the phrase is easy. I think the phrase is the easy part.
How long does it take you to write a song? Sometimes 2 minutes, sometimes 2 years?
Usually about 2 years.
How do you know when it's finished?
When I don't think I can make it any better. And sometimes that's a very long process for me, because I'm very careful with my lyric. I really like to say things that are important or fun, crafty. But usually I will sit with a version and tweak a few lines here and there until it feels like it said exactly what I wanted to say, and then the song's done. And then I have to learn it. That's the challenge for me, is I'm not one of those intuitive players that just picks up an instrument and can play anything with anybody at any time. And I take the arrangement and I hear it in my head, and then I have to teach my hands how to play it. And they're quite complex, usually. Like that last one probably took me 3 months to the point of practicing it, to the point I wanted to play it out.
Mm-hmm. You play fingerstyle guitar, bottleneck blues. What inspired you musically?
Oh, my.
Besides your family.
Yeah. Bonnie Raitt, Joni Mitchell, James Taylor, any of the great blues masters, I don't think I ever listen to music without honing in on how it was done and who the people were that played it. So that's a lifelong process. And pretty much, short of maybe super commercial canned music, I'm always listening to music in a way that hopefully adds to my own musical repertoire.
We'll play a song next. Her Baby Rides a Hog. You want to talk about that a bit, please?
Sure. I did notice there was a Harley shop in town, so that could be a good one to play. I wrote that song for a gal I used to sub at the post office for. I was living in Yakima, and my father and my children was in nursing school, and I held down a rural mail route to help pay the bills. And I worked on Saturdays, every Saturday, and some holidays. And the gal I worked for, on the weekends, she and her postmaster husband in the next town would get on their big bikes and go ride the countryside, which is very different than what her life was for the rest of the week. So that was where the nut of that song idea came from. Mm-hmm. Plus, I wanted to get it on Click and Clack the Tappet Brothers.
Did it ever happen?
Not yet, but I haven't sent it to them yet.
All right.
This album's only been out for a year. I haven't quite sent it out as everywhere it's going to go.
Let's check it out.
Monday. Monday through Friday, Di gets in her car and drives. Corporate jungle managerial jive. Her ducks are in a row, dozens of suits in tow, waiting the weekend to arrive. The minute that she gets home, her darling will telephone a graphic artiste with a mechanical flair. Come pick her up at 5, come take her for a ride, maybe it can be anywhere. You can keep your Mitsubishi, your Buick, and your Saab. You can keep your Civic Honda, cause her baby rides a hog. It feels so good when she's letting her lover lead. Loose stretch of gravel or a curve coming round. Keep ahead of the dust, a matter of grace and trust, knowing when to pray or slow down. You can keep your Mitsubishi, your Buick, and your Saab. You can keep your Civic Honda, cause her baby rides a hog. Going. She don't care when they get there. Send them around the bend, feeling the wind in their hair. Do-do-do. Di gets in her car and drives. Corporate jungle with a maverick air. Soon as he can, he'll come taking her on a run, riding on a wing and a dare. You can keep your Mitsubishi, your Buick, your Saab. You can keep your Civic Honda, cause her baby rides, her baby rides, her baby rides a hog.
It was Tracy off into the distance on her hog. Tracy Springs will be performing this time Friday at the Rookery at 7 o'clock. She's going to be making an appearance at the open mic at the Alaskan this week. Is that true?
Yeah, I hope so. Get there in time to sign up.
So let's talk a little bit about the music in the Northwest area. You've been playing there for a number of years. 20-plus years. Who are some of the names that you play with?
I played with Karen Wright. Who else have I played with? I played in a lot of music potlucks.
You ever do any street music out there?
I'm sorry?
You ever do street music?
I played a few times down at the Pike Place Market when I was a youngster, but no, I haven't done a whole lot of busking in recent years. But there is Saturday markets. I see them. I see people busking, so it's still done.
How would you categorize the music scene in the Northwest?
Oh, eclectic. Definitely eclectic. There's a very strong jazz scene in both the Bellingham and the Seattle areas, and folk is alive and well. We have, of course, a lot of really great touring artists come through in between Seattle and Vancouver, British Columbia. And just like when you were there, the university continues to book acts that please the students and the rest of the community members. Not quite as cool as Mama Sundays, but still a pretty good scene on the weekends.
Tell me a little bit more about the songwriting process. You get a kernel of it from an idea or an experience, and then you move on from there.
Yeah, and sometimes there will just be a story that is nagging at me to tell that story. And then the challenge is to refine the entire story, almost like the photographic process where you take the most beautiful or the most compelling part of the scene and compose it. Songwriting's a little bit like that too, that you can, there's lots of pieces of it you could tell, but what is going to be the most concise interesting part of that story. So that's the craft.
When you come up with a turn of phrase like a wing and a dare instead of a wing and a prayer, do you just kind of laugh to yourself, oh, I got a good one there?
Yeah, I do. Sometimes those just kind of pop in my head and I go, oh, thank you.
Do you write napkin notes?
I'm sorry?
Do you write napkin notes?
I've got a notebook. Sometimes I'll write down ideas, and then I keep a master list of ideas. If I get stuck about what I'm going to write next, oftentimes I'll refer to that list. Or I'll actually get an assignment, self-imposed or externally imposed. The last time I was up here was a couple years ago, and I worked with the SHARE campaign, and I wrote soundtracks for the state of Washington for their equivalent of the SHARE campaign. So those were songs about humanitarianism and philanthropy. So those were the kind of assignment songs that I would write, and then we'd produce them in a studio, and then I would take the writer's version to other campaigns like the SHARE campaign and sing those just with my guitar. So, yeah, I really enjoy honing in on compelling stories that need to be told, too.
And tell us about this next tune we're going to hear, Long Time Gone.
Yeah, there's a story song. I had been engaged to play at a wedding in Ellensburg, and my car broke. I ended up taking the Greyhound bus, and it was a rowdy bus. And I ended up sitting next to this woman, maybe in her early 80s, kind of hard to tell. She had a lot of vitality, but definitely a white-haired person. And to entertain ourselves and to forget about what was going on in the back seat, you don't want to know, we told each other our life stories. And hers was a lot longer than mine. But there were some really compelling pieces of it that I wanted to include in that song.
That's
and it was pretty much fiction, but... there's a lot of her spirit in that song.
Let's take a listen to it now.
Grace was born with loving hands. Her mama and papa worked the land. Times were hard. Love gave them strength to carry on. Grace wakened with a whisper in the fading dawn. We are here for a short while and a long time gone. Seeds blossom. Was grown. She took the world's work for her own. Turned away no soul in need, and always found another mouth to feed. Grace could never take her rest, though the road was long. She was here for a short while and a long time. Body back to the land, world of sorrow.
the best you can. Try to do no harm. We are here for a short while and a long time gone. Best we can, carry on. Here for a short while and a long time.
That is the music of Tracy Spring. She'll be appearing live in concert at the Rookeries this Friday night at 7 o'clock, and also she's going to try to make it into the open mic night tonight at the Alaskan. In the studio with us now is Christy Loney. She's the author of two books. One of them is called Life by the Lynn. She's having a book signing this Saturday, October 1st, from 1 p.m. at Hearthside Books at the Nugget Mall. Christy, thank you very much for being on the air with me today.
Thank you for inviting me.
So tell me a little bit about the Shrine of St. Therese.
The Shrine of St. Therese? Well, we first got to know the Shrine of St. Therese when we moved to Juneau in 1970, and then kind of forgot about it for quite a number of years until our children were all grown up and married, and then Vicki Kerr, one of the people that goes to St. Paul's, called us on the telephone and said, "Christy, I really think you and your husband are to be the new caretakers, that they need new caretakers at the Shrine of St. Therese." So that kind of brought the Shrine back on our radar screen.
But you were interested. You threw the application away.
Yes, I did. That was because at that time, our dog of 15 years had just died. Our youngest son was leaving for college, and our daughter was getting married. So we really didn't think that was a very good time to be thinking about taking on a job at the Shrine of St. Therese.
For people who aren't familiar with the Shrine, can you give us a little history lesson, please?
A little history lesson on the Shrine? Well, that's one of the things in my book. So if you buy my book, the whole first half of the book is telling all about the history of the Shrine of St. Therese, how it was built, all the different buildings. There are many different buildings there. Each one of them has a story in and of itself. And it is a Catholic retreat center. But people from all over the world come there, people that are non-Catholics, people that are in businesses here in Juneau, government officials, many, many different kinds of people come down to the Shrine of St. Therese because it's a place where you can come and just enjoy creation.
But you're Presbyterians, not Catholics.
I'm a Presbyterian, thank you. I was just talking about that with Katrina as we were coming in here, saying we were the first non-Catholics to be hired as caretakers at the Shrine of St. Therese. Thomas Fitterer sent us a second form, and we filled it out, and Bishop Michael was the bishop at that time. And Bishop Michael really wanted to have a more ecumenical outreach, and I think that was really why we got hired as the caretakers.
Your caretakers from 1988 to 1996. It's a great book. It's a book of, it's divided into two parts. The first part is a historical look at it, and the second part is comprised of dozens and dozens of stories.
That's true.
Why did you write the book in the first place? It seemed like a good manual for the future caretakers.
Well, it's not really a manual, but I'm writing because God called me to write about this. My first book, Destination Holiness, was very definitely a call of the Lord to share my life. And it sort of was the first beginnings of getting into writing, which I love to do. I'm not very good at grammar, but I love telling stories. And so there were many stories of our life at the Shrine of St. Therese. And so after I'd finished my first book, God said, how about the second one? And so there were just many experiences that we had living at the Shrine of St. Therese in the little log cabin.
It's appropriate that a book about the Shrine have a healthy amount of religion in it.
I don't think I could write a book that didn't have something about who I am as part of my faith journey. It's the Lord Jesus Christ in my life is something that is part of my everyday life.
And in addition to stories, you have a bunch of facts about eagles.
Yes. We had eagles. There's a story about us praying for an eagle that had caught a fish. I don't know if you've read that story, but he swooped right down into the water and caught the fish, but then he wasn't able to, the fish was too big for him to get up off the ground, off the water, and so he was stuck. The talons are locked, and they can't let go of the fish until they get somewhere that they can put it down, and we just waited in our car before we left for church praying for that eagle as it used its huge wings like oars and got itself to shore. And, of course, then it was exhausted and the fish was able to be released from its talons and the crows were right there and got the fish. It was very sad, but we were glad the eagle was saved.
But I did learn that the eagle's bones are light because they're hollow.
That's right.
Do you have a favorite story of the book?
Yes, I do. I think my favorite, well, I don't know if it's my favorite, but it's one that I really enjoy because my granddaughter did the little sketch for it. And it's, let me see, it's called The Grandstand View.
Can you share it with us, please?
Sure, I'd love to. The Grandstand View is on page 105, and the little sketch by my 9-year-old granddaughter is on page 104. Our log cabin home was comfortable and cozy, with many windows out of which we enjoy God's amazing creation. No matter where we looked, we had a view. Water vistas, forest green, rocky beaches. The Lynn Canal, often called the breadbasket by fishermen who would come in their boats and spend the day catching their supper. And an incredible, uninterrupted view of the snow-capped Chilkat Mountains on the opposite shores of the inside passage waters of the Lynn Canal. It truly was an idyllic place to live. Out of the kitchen window near my desk looked out across the access road, which came down from Glacier Highway past our log cabin and into the parking lot of the Shrine of St. Therese. Across the road were the lodge and a vista of the beach beyond. But right in close to the house at the side of the road were some large evergreen trees in a semicircle. Inside the circle area was a large scooped-out area in the dirt, probably made as the result of winter snow removal. In any case, it looked a lot like a sports arena. Early one morning, as I was working on some papers preparing the monthly caretaker's report, I happened to be looking out the window when two weasels, sporting their brownish summer coats, arrived on the scene. Weasels have a very beautiful white ermine coat in the wintertime. I watched in fascination as these two entered the arena and walked around and around, eyeing each other across the dugout dirt space. After some minutes, they took up positions in the middle of the arena, and to what seemed to me like some unheard gunshot announcing the beginning of their sport, began to go at each other with a vengeance. As if this was not enough entertainment, out of nowhere a murder of crows arrived. They crowded above in the treetop stadium bleacher branches. It was absolutely hilarious. The caw-cawing of the crows seemed to get louder and louder as the weasels battled in the arena below. It was very evident the crows had chosen sides and were caw-cawing their support from their bleacher branches for their chosen weasel. The louder the crows got, the more the weasels went at each other. Then, almost without any warning, the fight was over, with no apparent winner. We watched as two rather beaten-looking weasels took off in different directions, to lick their wounds, I suspect. And the crows, they flew off to caw another day.
It's Christy Looney reading from her book, Life by the Lynn. Do you accompany each book and do that marvelous reading? Your voice is just wonderful. I wonder if you could go along with each book.
Never thought about doing that. That's an idea.
I noticed that Peter and Sandy Metcalf spent their honeymoon there, as well as probably countless other people spent their honeymoon in the post office. You want to talk about the post office for a little bit, if you could, please?
Well, the post office, it was interesting. I was talking with Katrina coming in. It, back in the early days of the Shrine of St. Therese, it actually was a post office for people who lived out the road. But it hasn't, it still has that post office sign on the building, but it's been many years since it was a post office. But that was one of the things that we had to answer many questions when tourists from all over the world come down in the tour buses and they want to know if we'll mail letters for them because it does say post office. But it's when we lived there, it was a little two-bedroom cabin with a little kitchen and with bunk beds. And one of the reasons that it was really fun to prepare for Sandy and Peter Metcalf was that they were our first honeymoon couple of our time as caretakers. And I just couldn't imagine honeymooners having to sleep in bunk beds. And so my husband and I took the bunk bed mattresses and got permission to put them on the floor in a great big queen-size bed. And I bought sheets and we bought flowers and candy kisses. And it was just really fun to fix it up like a honeymoon suite.
And I understand from reading the book that you were mistaken for Mother Teresa.
Yes. There was a tour bus of Japanese tourists came one time, and mostly Japanese, and I was out working in the garden planting flowers and things. It was springtime, and the sign up at the top of the road says Shrine of St. Therese. Now, it is spelled differently, and so these Japanese were getting a tour of the place, and all of a sudden one calls out and says, there she is, Mother Therese. And so everybody was click, click, clicking, and before I could get up off the ground and explain that, no, that was not me, they were on the bus and they were gone.
We live on in photographs of tourists, thousands of photographs.
So I don't know what they said when they got home with that picture.
I'm talking with Christy Loney. She's the author of a book, Life by the Lynn, and also another book called Destination Holiness.
That's right.
You could have both books on display and for sale at the Hearthside Books at 1
yes,
o'clock
I
on
will.
Sunday?
Mm-hmm.
Or Saturday, excuse me.
Saturday.
And tell me about the proceeds from the books.
My husband and I, after we finished our 8 years as caretakers at the Shrine of St. Therese, went overseas in mission work into China. And we continue that today in Central Asia, primarily in some of the Stan countries, former Soviet Union. And so proceeds from both of these books, Destination Holiness and Life by the Lynn, provide us some funding to be able to keep doing this ministry work overseas.
I'm always amazed at people when they come up with a series of memoirs or memories that they can remember that. Did you keep a diary or anything like that when you were...
I've done that from the day I met my husband, and I've been married. This is our 51st year, so I can tell you what we have done every day of our married life.
So it's not just a super memory?
No. Every time I would write a report to give to Thomas Fitterer, the shrine director, when we were the caretakers, he would say, well, that's another chapter in the book you will one day write. So I have all those caretaking notes that I turned in as reports to help me write the book.
Christy Loney, thank you so much for coming down. Christy's having a book signing October 1st, which is Saturday at 1 o'clock at Hearthside Books in the Nugget Mall. Her books will be available, Life by the Lynn and also Destination Holiness. Christy, is there anything you'd like to add I might have forgotten to ask?
No, I would just like to thank you very much for the privilege of being able to be here. Thank you.
It's fall, and Gold Street Music is back with a concert on Saturday, October 1st at 7:30 at Resurrection Lutheran Church. The performers are Eric McDowell, Dean Frank, The Hen House, that's Lizzie Elkins and Wendy Gervin, Joe Emerson, and Irene Muller. That's Gold Street Music on Saturday, October 1st at 7:30 at Resurrection Lutheran Church. Tickets at the door.
Support for programming on this station is provided by Jesse Keel, candidate for Juneau Assembly District 1, paid for by Keel for Assembly, Harvey Marvin and Margaret Pugh co-chairs, 535 Harris Street, Juneau.
Time is 3:53 and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau. Group Tevaka is going to be performing in a concert brought to you by the Juneau Arts and Humanities Council Sunday, October 16th at the Juneau Douglas High School Auditorium. Here's a sampling of their music now.
Thank you.
Sample from the music of Te Baca. They'll be performing Sunday, October 16th at the Juno Douglas High School Auditorium in a concert brought to you by the Juno Arts and Humanities Council. Time is 3:58 and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. KTOO also broadcasts on these translators. In the Valley and Auk Bay area, tuned to K276 AF at 103.1. Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, K269 AO at 101.7. Gustavus listens on K201 AM 88.1, K220 BT serves Huna at 91.9, and Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait, you can hear KTOO on K210 AS 89.9, and in Juneau you can also receive KTOO on GCI Cable Juneau on digital channel 871. We're also online at www.ktoo.org. Tomorrow at 3 on a Juneau afternoon, Pat Moore will host. We'll find out about the family pre-party for Friday's Superfest. We'll also get an in-depth look at the Juneau Economic Development Council's report on Juneau and Southeast Alaska economic indicators. And Nancy DeTourney will be here with news and views about local art activities during Arts Up. It's tomorrow at 3 here on a Juneau afternoon. With the forecast for tonight, periods of rain with patchy fog later on, low temperatures around 42 degrees. Forecast for Thursday, rain likely with high temperatures around 47 degrees. And the forecast for Thursday night, more rain with low temperatures around 40. Looks like rain is likely through at least Saturday. And up next, it's All Things Considered. Thank you for tuning in to a Juneau afternoon today. Have a great evening. Leave you a little bit more of Te Baca.
Talo hia he tau I tā ua, he te lumana ki, manui e tau haipa, malanga ki ko. Hiki ki lunga, hai pēna aloha, nā kukoe lava, I tō pūloto.